is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Whoa, this is going to be a great day. I have two great authors. At the bottom of the hour, I have Joni Elliott with her new book, The Audacity of Sarah Grayson. It's her new book. It's her first book, and I'm excited to talk to her. But right now, I want to talk to somebody who has a lot of books. Anita Silvey has written a book that is, it's just so, it just grabs your heart when you think about it, and it's just so fascinating, and it's called Unforgotten, The Wild Life of Diane Fossey and Her Relentless Quest to Save Mountain Gorillas. And it is by Anita Silvey, and I'm so happy to welcome Anita. Hi, Anita.
Hi there. How are you?
Okay. Well, it is wonderful to have you on the program and so that we can talk about this very important book. And, of course, I want to say there's a beautiful foreword by Ellen DeGeneres. And it is a Nat Geo book, which is, of course, because Nat Geo is I love National Geographic. They are the greatest, just the greatest company in the world. They do so much for conservation. They have been always in the forefront of protecting the environment and doing the research and helping the researchers. So tell us about how you got involved, Anita, because you have already, you've written about 100 books, I think.
I think this is my 14th.
14th? I thought there were, like, that's all? I thought there were a lot more. Well, it seems like a lot more. It looks good. So Anita, how did you get involved with doing this book about Diane Fossey?
Well, a few years back, Nat Geo contacted me because Jane Goodall was coming up on her 80th birthday. And they realized, they had funded Jane Goodall at the beginning of her research, and they realized that there was no book that for kids that took in the whole of her life. You know, everybody focused on the years that she worked with chimpanzees, but of course she's become a great advocate, travels around the world, you know, is engaged in all kinds of causes. And they asked me if I would like to do a book on Jane Goodall. And, you know, I think the call came in July, but Nat Geo asking you if you want to do a book on Jane Goodall, it was like Christmas. I mean, I said instantly, of course, I'd love to do that book. So I began to research not only Jane, but for that book, also the two other women, Birute Galdakas, who looked at orangutans, and Diane Fossey, who did mountain gorillas, because they were all brought into the field by Lewis Leakey. And the Jane Goodall book worked out so well that basically they said, why don't we do a biography on all three of them? So that's really how it began. It starts with Jane, and then I look at the other women who were brave enough to go out in the field and do animal research at that time.
Well, and they were brave. What they took on was really quite amazing.
Yeah, I was just amazed by how much physical difficulty Diane Fossey faced. I mean, she's up in high elevations in the mountains, and there are times when even to trace the gorillas, she has to take an oxygen tank with her so that she can get enough oxygen. She gets pneumonia, she breaks an ankle, she is bitten by an animal, they're afraid she might have rabies. She has teeth problem, you know, appendicitis problems. She's miles and miles from any kind of medical help, and yet she just never gives up, and she keeps persevering because she loves these animals so much.
Well, as I was reading the story of how it all started, it reminded me that it is very sad that right now, because people cannot meet each other. They can't go to events. And all of her, really, what happened to her all came from attending somebody's speech. And nowadays, of course, everybody's doing things on Zoom, so all these events are on Zoom. You don't make that personal connection. So if you're lucky enough that you go to an event and you hear a speaker who inspires you and somebody, you know, you can then afterwards talk to, And I'm just so happy that, you know, she had that opportunity. Explain how it all started with that, just attending that one lecture.
Well, it started because she wanted to go on an African safari. She loved all kinds of animals. She kept all kinds of pets. She is working in Louisville, Kentucky as an occupational therapist. And so she gets a loan. She takes everything out of the bank that she has, and for 7 weeks she goes to Africa. And at the end of that trip, she is taken up the mountain to see a family of mountain gorillas. And she falls basically in love. I mean, it's literally like reading a story of you see the love of your life across the crowded room and you know you're going to end up with them. You know, I mean, she just is completely taken by these animals. She believes that she has a strong kinship connection to them. But she's in Louisville, Kentucky, and, you know, she has no training in science. And so, but she starts to write for local newspapers, which, by the way, is advice that I give writers all the time, even till today. You know, if you can't have a national platform, get started by writing whatever you need to write for anything local, whether it's a local blog, local newspaper. And then a small miracle happened because Lewis Lakey, who had sent Jane Goodall to work with the chimpanzees, gives a lecture in Louisville, and Diane brings her newspaper column. She stands in line, as you said, you know, she came to talk to him. She said, I want to study mountain gorillas, and he said, meet me for breakfast.
Oh, it's such a beautiful story. It's just,
isn't it?
It's gorgeous. You know, sometimes people, when they go out on lecture tours, and authors, when they go out, or they used to go out on these book tours, they'd say, well, is it worth it? But sometimes it is that actual human connection, some spark, when you are with a real person that you're never going to get on Zoom. And I know that Mary Higgins Clark told me that many times when she would give, in the old days when she used to, you know, have these big lecture tours where she'd go across the country, and she'd say afterwards, you know, years later, someone would come up to me and say, I started writing because I listened to you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. This can happen when you have these events.
Yeah, in fact, I think all of us who are authors, I mean, you know, we long to get back on the road again, because there's nothing the same as what can happen when you have a real book event and you have people who have come because they want to hear you. You know, they're there because you're speaking about to something to them. So, but this was one of those events. By the way, they have breakfast. She says, I'm 32, maybe I'm too old. He said, no, that's okay, I don't mind that. She said, I don't have any scientific training. He said, no, I don't mind that. He liked people who were whose brains were uncluttered by theory. He wanted people who could observe. And he liked everything about her. She was gutsy, she was strong, she was independent. And he went and found funding from the National Geographic to send Diane Fossey off to Africa, in the mountains of Africa. Eventually, she settled in Rwanda for the best place for her station. And this research is going to last for 18 years.
Wow.
All due to an encounter at a lecture, you know.
Yeah, in Lexington, Kentucky. I mean, no, you know, who goes there? Nobody goes there. And then, whoa.
Well, exactly. It's not, you know, it shouldn't have happened, and yet it did happen.
It was meant to be. It was just meant to be.
Jane Goodall was a secretary. I mean, she had not even gone to college. And he thought she was fabulous. He took her out, in Jane's case, he took her out in a car, and he showed every animal that they encountered. He said, what's that? What's that? She got everyone right. She adored animals. And he said, you know, I want you to go study animals for me. So, you know, it was that was also another one of those encounters that was quite wonderful.
Wow. Wow. And, of course, tell us about some of her favorite animals. But, you know, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. I mean, I found myself crying. It's so hard to think of people killing these animals to cut off their heads as some kind of a prize, or their hands, and who would want them? Who would encourage poachers to do this? It's disgusting.
Yeah, one of the greatest problems she was up against were the poachers. in the area, and she really set up virulent practices, poaching patrols, you know, all kinds of things to get this, keep this from happening. I mean, some of the other encounters are quite wonderful. I start the book with her seeing Peanut. She named this little gorilla Peanuts. He was sort of an adolescent gorilla, and he's strutting around and, you know, doing all kinds of things. And she sits there, and she starts to scratch herself, and Peanut scratches himself. And then she reaches her hand out, and he takes his hand and grabs hers, and they are holding hands.
Oh.
And then Peanuts just struts off, you know, and goes off and plays with his friends. And Diane Fossey said she just sat there and wept tears of joy because she didn't know of any other incident where a gorilla had reached out and touched and held hands with a human being. But, of course, as she studies them, she gets to love them. You know, she gets to know them. They are, she thinks of themselves as her family. At one point, she named one of them Uncle Bert, after her own uncle. And he was quite cranky about it because he didn't like the idea of a gorilla named after him. But she meant it as a compliment. You know, she really was fond of him, and she wanted to name a gorilla after him. So she names them, she gets to know them, and she had a favorite. There was a Digit who she adored. She named him because he had one finger. He had gotten caught in a trap, and there was a finger missing from one of his hands. And he is tragically murdered by poachers one night. And she just goes crazy with grief. I mean, she, you know, it's like she's lost a child. And this really makes her redouble her efforts and really become, you know, frantic in her desire to try to protect these animals who she values now because she knows them so much.
And she managed in all these years to really write reports about the animals that nobody, she discovered things that nobody had known before.
That's right. She, you know, the image, of course, was of King Kong and chasing Fay Wray around the Empire State Building. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, the male, strong male gorilla always stays with his family, and they're very peaceful. They are plant eaters. They eat 75 pounds of plants a day. That's a lot of, you know, that's more than your salad at lunch, that's for sure. They really are, they're constantly eating plants, and the males play with the young gorillas. They wrestle with them. They tickle them. They bounce the young gorillas on their big bellies because they have huge bellies. And the family is always together. They're completely family-oriented animals. And nobody knew any of these things until Diane spent a lot of time with them. So she really changes the way people look at them, but also because National Geographic was funding her, they sent in a camera person right away, and he started to film her interactions with the gorillas. And so eventually on television, they get this great National Geographic special about the gorillas, which really educates Americans for the first time about what they're really like, about what these animals are. So not only is she studying them, she's creating a community that knows how wonderful they are. You know, she's educating the world, and she writes Gorillas in the Mist. She does, you know, all kinds of lectures and, you know, educational material, and bringing the world into loving these animals the way she does.
Which was important because they were really headed for extinction, and they still are, but at least now we have you know, millions of people who are concerned, and people like Ellen DeGeneres who have, you know, put in a lot of money to help set up areas where they can be protected.
Yeah, exactly. There were 275. That was the first census Diane did. That nobody even knew how many there were in the area. And today there are well over 600, and the number's growing every year. And she created, you know, the Diane Fossey Fund, which keeps going and, you know, provides money to do protection and research. And she got Sir David Attenborough to come and do a film of Life on Earth in her area. And that's where we see him play with a family of gorillas who invited him in. So he started to set up some funding as well. So because she got so many people involved, suddenly there was money for education and for bringing people into the area, you know, small ecotourism events where a group of six people could go out and go up into the mountains and actually be with a gorilla family. And that, of course, everybody who sees them then becomes one of the advocates when they go back home and they show their pictures and, you know, they become part of keeping these animals alive. All of that was set up during her lifetime so that even after she died, really, she had put the machinery in order. Her graduate students were staying in the area. They were driving these conservation efforts. And what she wanted is being very much carried out today.
Well, that's so important. And, you know, you've written this book. It's geared for children, but it's really adults should read this book because it will just, it's heart-wrenching. And, you know, she had so many tragedies in her life. She had a difficult childhood, but she devoted herself to something so important and made a difference. And that's so beautiful. And even with all her problems, and you said, of course, physical problems, and then she got really angry. I mean, she got really angry at these people who were trying to kill her family. And she went to sometimes extremes, which were not perhaps acceptable, but they're certainly understandable.
Yeah, it was that kind of rage against, and as you said, they're now her family, you know, this is now her Uncle Bert, you know, even though he's a gorilla. And she was kind of a warrior princess in terms of defending her family. She did things that people told her she shouldn't be doing, but she just was so passionate about trying to keep these animals alive. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot of tragedy in her life. I mean, it was Lewis Lakey who said Diane's whole life was a tragedy. A tough childhood. She'll be murdered, of course, in her cabin.
Yeah.
In doing her research. I mean, that there is a really tragic arc to her story. But I think the story as it goes on, the story as we have it today, which is really her success of protecting these gorillas and making others in the world love them as well. In that, she succeeded admirably.
And it's important. You write quite a bit about her childhood, and it is important that any young person who is reading this book, and they might have a difficult childhood. So many children do, with the number of parents who are, you know, taking drugs, or you know, having other psychological problems because of drinking and whatever. I think any childhood who reads this book will say, well, she overcame that. She went ahead and she followed her dream. She might not have had the perfect education for whatever she wanted to do, but she learned what she needed to learn, and she did what she needed to do, and she was strong. I mean, amazing strength to live that kind of life by herself, sometimes for long periods of time without human beings there to help her or protect her. And I think it's a very inspiring book for young people to read.
Yeah, her life is inspiring to me. You know, you can overcome adversity. You don't have to know when you're 18 exactly what you want to do. You know, she's 32 before she figures this out. I mean, that you have some time to find the path. And that if you find something that you love and that you can wedge yourself to, you can feel that satisfaction of doing work, you know, whatever your work is. And so the book is really about finding yourself, finding your passion, and making a difference in the world because you do that, you know, that you connect with something that you care about. And I think that's a message for any young reader, even if they've had a lovely childhood, and do you know what I mean?
Or, yeah, exactly, you know, exactly.
Still trying to figure out, you know, what they want to do in their lives. It's a message that can, you know, make them think, okay, maybe there's something, if I love animals, maybe there's something I can do in this world that will make a difference, you know, and I don't have to go to Africa, you know, it could be animal research in the United States,
exactly,
taking censuses of birds and bird count days, you know, it can be all kinds of things that just connect you to the real world. So that's really what I think about as I write books like this about Jane and Berute and Diane, that they're such incredible role models in so many ways of a life well lived.
Well, and you too, you have devoted much of your life to writing about books and encouraging children to read.
I've in 50 years in the career in children's books, and I thought I was going to teach kids, and there were no teaching jobs. And then I heard of an opening in publishing at Little Brown and Company in the children's book department, and I said, oh, gee, if I can't teach kids, it might be fun to create books for them. You know, and 50 years later, yeah, it's still fun to create books for them. I mean, that there's no question. So, yeah, I know what true believers like these women go through, you know, of how if you find something that you really love and you stay with it and you take different paths if you have to, but that you always remain true to something greater than yourself. For me, that any child has a book put in their hands that's beautifully produced, like this
National Geographic book. This book, of course, I always recommend National Geographic books as gifts. All the time. They are the best gift that you can give to anybody, and particularly children. I love Nat Geo children's books. I love the Nat Geo kids website. It's a wonderful place to go. It's a magical, actually. I love it myself. So did you have anything else you wanted to recommend? Because this book is called Unforgotten, and it is available wherever books are sold, of course, online. And it's The Wildlife of Diane Fossey and Her Relentless Quest to Save Mountain Gorillas. And it's by Anita Silvey, and a beautiful, beautiful foreword by Ellen DeGeneres. And I'm actually going to try to invite her on. I'd love for her to talk about her adventures there and how she got involved in helping to protect and save the mountain gorillas. So, Anita, did you have a website or something you want to mention?
It's just Anita Silvey, SILVEY.com, or at Anita Silvey on Twitter. So.
Okay. Well, Anita, thank you so much for being with me today on Joy on Paper. You've written a wonderful book, just perfect. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay. We'll go to commercial, and then I'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Joni Elliott. And the name of her book is The Audacity of Sarah Grayson. And this girl is full of audacity. Joni Elliott, you are a dangerous woman. Hi, welcome to Joy on Paper.
Hello, Patsy. Thank you for having me.
Okay. You know how when there are products, sometimes you'll see somebody slapped on a label, it says danger, or we'll be bilingual, Pellegro. Well, that's what they have to slap here on the cover of your book, because this book is dangerous. Do not, I'm telling people, do not take this book to the pool or to the beach unless you have a 32-ounce bottle of sunscreen, because you're not going to stop reading. You're going to stay there until you're done. It is so good. I got such a kick out of this book, and, you know, I get it long before everybody else, and I've had this kick for a while. I've actually gone back. You know, I get books, and first of all, I love the cover. I knew the minute I saw the cover, I said, this cover is so good. It reminds me, immediately I was thinking of the Penguin book cover book. They have a book with all their covers, and I love that book. It's one of my favorites. And I saw this when I saw this cover, The Audacity of Sarah Grayson. It's such a cool cover. It's such a cool cover. And then I don't know where to start. I didn't know where to start. Don't read this, please.
I'm thrilled that you loved it.
Oh.
High praise indeed. So thank you. And for your listeners, it's the picture of Sarah Grayson on her bag.
On her bag. With her legs
in the air. She's got bunny slippers. And it's pretty much me. I think.
I was thinking, I think that's Joni. They use Joni. Yeah. With a book covering her face, her bunny slippers. I said, oh, this is so cool. This is going to be good. I knew it was going to be good. I didn't know it was going to be so good. And I did not know, you see, because I always keep these things secret. I never listened to publicists work so hard writing all this stuff up that they send, you know, along with the books. I hate to tell them this. I never read it. I tuck it away because I don't want to be influenced.
Right.
So I've got the cover. I've got the book. And then I start reading the book and I say, okay, I know it's going to be good. And then it's good and it's getting better. It's getting better. I say, okay, I am so happy. It was actually a rainy day and I was not at the pool because that thought occurred to me that people would be sorry because I knew it was coming out for the summer read. You know, it's a beach book. They say it's a beach book. Yeah, but they should, you know, they should sell something along with it. So you'd sunscreen.
I love it. Thank you, Patsy.
Oh, wow. Wow. Is first book? That's not fair.
Well, it's my debut novel, not my first
book. No, I know it's not your first book, but it's a debut novel.
I had to go through some duds. I mean, my practice ones, you know.
Practice ones. And then you come out with this thing, and you're like, oh, my gosh, oh, my dear, Sassafras and Ginger Beer, she's written a book that just is, good. It's good. It's really good. Let's just lay the premise a little bit. A little bit, because it is funny, actually. I mean, it's not funny. It's sort of sad. It's a little bit sad. I'm sorry. Her mom died. You lay the premise for The Audacity of Sarah Grayson, but don't give away too much.
Yeah, I won't. Well, the plot centers around two main questions. What happens when the world's greatest literary icon dies before she finishes the final book in her best-selling series? And what happens when she leaves that book in the hands of her unstable, somewhat neurotic daughter who swears she is not a real writer? And so that person is Sarah Grayson, and she's just barely hanging on to life. And 3 weeks after Sarah's mother dies, Sarah finds out that it's her mother's dying wish that Sarah write the final book in this iconic best-selling series. And for Sarah, she is horrified. She does not want to have this pressure, this weight on her shoulders. She doesn't consider herself a real writer. I mean, sure, maybe 10 years ago she dreamed of becoming a writer, but she gave that up years ago.
Well, she's writing greeting cards. I mean, she hasn't given it up completely. I mean, you know, she's got a talent for greeting cards.
But, you know, just a greeting card, try to tackle the, you know, greatest series in the world, and she doesn't certainly doesn't think so. And her husband's recently left her. She's living alone with her dog Gatsby.
She's got it.
Eating frozen meals. I mean, her last week's big win was just resetting the microwave clock. In a series of some.
Oh, I wish she'd come to my house. I have not set that thing. I've not been able to set it since stupid daylight savings time. It's all wrong.
I know. But, you know, in some strange events, Sarah does make a bold move that surprises even.
Well,
and she takes it on.
Well, we'll take it on, but we're not going to tell if she's going to be successful. But the funny thing, it reminded me, of course, of Sue Grafton, who, you know, passed away. Well, you know, she was on the program many times, and she and I were both in Hollywood at the same time writing scripts. And she hated script writing. She couldn't stand the script meetings. And of course she wrote the very, very famous series, the Alphabet series, Kinsey Millhone series. And so, you know, she brought Kinsey Millhone. We had done the interviews. We were going through the alphabet. You know, I started my program late, so I wasn't there when she started with A. But there she was going along, and we were. I was waiting for Z's, for zero. I had already, you know, technically I had booked her. I said, Sue, when's it coming out? I put you on my calendar, and of course she passed away before she finished. Z is for zero. And so there she left it hanging. And in her case, it is going to hang. Her daughter is not writing the book.
She's not going to write it.
Because her daughter was, first of all, Sue would come back and haunt her. And then the poor daughter would have to write a ghost story. Sue was very adamant that no one would ever write, you know, her character. As a matter of fact, she didn't want anyone ever to make a movie out of her books because she didn't want it. And she was a tough character. And she was funny because she and I both worked in a lab when we were young. And so I hate to say this, we did a lot of urine and other samples of bodily materials.
Mm-hmm.
So we could relate, and we would say something was the color of some kind of some kind of pee-pee. Anyway, she didn't want anyone to make a film out of her books. And she was offered many times, millions of dollars.
Wow.
Millions. And she rejected it. And I had told her, and as a matter of fact, when she was doing, she was always a great writer of notes and taking, you know, getting prepared. And I knew she was on Z. And I told her, I said to her, you know, I don't know how you're going to end it, but here's what I want you to do. Because, you know, Z is the end, and people are always saying, what are you going to do after Z? And I said, what you have to do in book Z, have her meet a Russian. She falls in love with a Russian, and so Kinsey heads off to Russia, and she starts writing espionage thriller books. And since the Russian alphabet has 33 letters... She could have another 33 books.
I love it.
Wouldn't that have been perfect?
I love it. Oh, brilliant.
Oh, you know, and I wish so much it had happened because she would have been great at espionage thrillers.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And you are great at, I don't know, what do we call it? What's category? It's under comedy?
Yeah, it's contemporary adult fiction. It's the broad.
Oh, gosh.
Have a little something for everyone, and that it has some mystery, some romance, and a lot of humor. I loved writing it. I hope people will.
Oh, I think
Sarah's journey.
I think so. I think they will. I've had such a run this week. I always have great writers, but this week I've just been so lucky, and. This one, particularly, of course, I don't know, probably you do. I'm a great predictor when I read a book that, you know, because I was writing screenplays years ago, when I see a book that I want to write the screenplay for, I know it's going to be a hit. And I know that, of course, this is going to be a film deal. I don't know if you've got the film deal already.
Oh, goodness, I do not. But wouldn't I love that? That would be so fantastic.
Well, you will. Don't worry. I'm already telling you this because it was funny. I had on Tuesday, my guest was Mary Dixie Carter, and she wrote a book called The Photographer. And so I knew that book would become a film. The minute I read it, 2 pages into it, I said, this has got to be a film. I want to see this because I'm so tired of those boring squares that they have on, you know, all those streaming channels. I said, I need a new square. And I want The Photographer by Mary Dixie Carter. And then, of course, I had you. And I said, the audacity of Sarah Grayson. And my goodness, I mean, you've got the perfect... just a photograph right there on that. I see it as a square on those streaming videos because it is going to be a book deal. Well, and so Mary Dixie said to me, well, I wasn't going to say this, but I have a film deal. It's supposed to be a secret.
So great for her. So, oh, brought it out of her. Well done, Patsy.
Wow. But I knew it. And so now I know it with you. And I know that you're going to get a film deal. And I'm making you promise live here on air that when you get the film deal, you will announce it here on Joy on Paper.
Oh, my gosh. Wouldn't I love to do that? I would love to do that, Patsy.
You will because, this is going to be so much fun. Oh, you know, sometimes you get a book where you just, you know, I always look at it from a scriptwriter's point of view. What would I dump? And sometimes I was given a book. I was giving him a book once, like 532 pages. And at the end, after a script meeting, one of the other script writers, because in Hollywood you have more than one usually, he said to me, "What are you going to dump?" I said, "All of it." He said, "What are you going to make out of it?" I said, "A paycheck."
Oh, my goodness. Well, so, you know, I had to cut so much from my original draft. I could have used you. You are probably fantastic when it comes to the cutting.
Oh, wow. So tell me how much fun you had. Where'd you get the idea? And then how much fun you had writing it. And I know it was a challenge. And it took everything out of you.
I'd love to tell you about that. You know, I was teaching writing at the University of Maryland. And I had this dream of writing and publishing a novel. And so it was 2015, and I thought, you know, if I keep teaching writing instead of writing, I am never going to make this happen. And I was not a good multitasker. I have lots of colleagues who are great at managing the teaching and the writing, and I was not. And so I just said to my husband, you know, I'm going to have to quit if I'm ever going to do this, at least for a couple of years. And he said, go for it. And, you know, talked to my 2 daughters, and they were on board. And so I said, I'm going to do this. And so my first semester away from the university, I went for it. I was so full of excitement to do this. And you know what? It went from bad to worse to agonizing. I had so many starts and stops, and it just was not working. And 4 months in, I was in my bathroom crying, feeling sorry for myself. You know, I was distracted, and when you're distracted, you do other stuff. So I was cleaning out my kitchen pantries, organizing my closets. I was wandering the aisles of the Container Store in my yoga pants and no bra, pretending I was doing research for a character that I never did write. So this day in the bathroom, I thought, well, at least nobody cares if I write a book. Nobody even knows I'm writing a book because I wasn't like I was telling everybody. I didn't want people to be asking me, hey, how's that book going? And for a moment I thought, what would it be like if people were waiting? Like, what would it be like if thousands of people were waiting or millions of people? What would that be like? And that's when I first imagined this sad sort of character who had the weight of the world on her shoulders. And that's the moment I pictured Sarah Grayson.
Oh.
There she was, born in my bathroom. It was a home birth delivery with no pain medication. And I knew pretty quickly that it was her mother that had left her the book. And things started to take off from there. I decided to stop trying to write in the Container Store. That helped. And I started to really, you know, get serious about my time and protecting it, you know, treating it like a job, needing to be at my computer by a certain time. And then things started to come together. And so that's where the inspiration came from, really from my own angst, my own writing angst. And so, you know, some of Sarah's journey mirrors my own for sure, because, you know, writing is a slow process for me. It's a bit of a struggle. And so I was a bit, you know, in the same boat as her. Certainly not, I did not have millions of people waiting for my book by any means, but that deep dive into the process I needed to take along with Sarah.
You did. Okay, so you finish the book and you say, and many people have contacted me this year because they've written books in the pandemic and they finish, and they started like in March when I started telling people write a book, and they finished sometime around the end of the year because they all made the deadline. I'm going to finish by the end of the year. And I started getting these emails. I finished the book. Now what do I do?
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Well, you know, Well, first of all, I had a fantastic writing group, so I was taking it through my writing group even a couple times, so doing lots and lots of revision because I wanted it to be the very best version it could be before I even took it to an agent. So, you know, I attended the New York Pitch Conference in New York, where you have a chance to pitch to editors and agents there, and it was there that I met my agent, loosely met her. She came and she talked to our group there, and she said that we could pitch her. And I don't know if maybe some of your listeners know this, some may not, but you cannot actually send your work to most publishing houses in adult fiction unless you have an agent representing you. So you have to have an agent who takes your work there. And so that means you've got to query or pitch your work to an agent and try and get them to sign you on so that they can send your work to publishing houses. So Jennifer Weiss, my agent there, she said we could send her 50 pages of our work after the conference and pitch our work to her, and she'd look at it. So that's great if you have just kind of an in. It means your stuff rises to the top of their slush pile. And you know, 2 days after I sent her work, she'd read it. She asked for the whole thing and read the whole thing and wanted it, which was thrilling because normally it takes months. But I'll tell you, after that, there was just a lot of rejection, just tons and tons of it. And so that was probably like October of 2019, yeah, that I'd signed with her, and it wasn't until May that we finally found a home for my book. And then it was a year after that that took, you know, of getting it ready to publish, and then it just came out last week. So it's a journey, I'll tell you. Patience with the process has been my motto. It's just like, Joni, it's patience with the process. It's just, but also thrilling.
Well, it comes down to determination and sticking to it and knuckling under and doing it, and you did it, and it's come out so well.
Yeah.
And while I have you on, because since you are a English teacher, I want to ask you a serious question.
Ooh, all right.
In a book, how many colons in a novel? I'm talking a novel, mm-hmm. not a scientific journal. In a novel, how many colons do you think you should have? How many sentences should you have where you say, "Oh, I have to make a decision: colon, left or right?" Well, he came up to me and he said, "I would like to know what you think: colon, should you do that?" How many colons should be legal?
Well, Patsy, I think that would be 5.5% in a book that's 300 pages, exactly. That's my call.
Oh, I have been getting, somebody has been going through these grammar programs, and they are putting colons in everything.
Are they really? I haven't even thought about it. I don't have a lot of colons, I don't think.
I know you don't.
Yeah. But that's fantastic, really. You're seeing a lot of colons?
Yes. It must be some new grammar things.
Grammarly.
Where they break out the sentences and they say, "Well, make it tighter. say this, do a colon, and and I'm getting crazy.
Someone's having fun with it. Must be the new thing. Maybe we're behind, Patsy.
Maybe we are.
We get on board with that.
Well, you are really terrific. It's just so much fun. And as I said, you have to promise that you will come here and announce your deal, book deal. It's on its way. Somebody is going to see this.
I would love it.
And do it, because, and then after that, you will really know what it's like to write to a deadline. Because once you write a movie, they want you to shove those books out, and all those old books that you wrote that you thought weren't good enough, they'll take them out. They'll publish anything.
Oh, goodness. What a great problem to have.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's called The Audacity of Sarah Grayson. Wonderful cover. The book is available wherever books are sold. And Joni Elliott with an I. See, I'm Patsy with an I at the end of my name. P-A-T-Z-I. And so we are distinctive people. There's something. We put the I in our names. And it could be egotism. Do you think we're egotistical? I don't know.
We're meant to be friends, Patsy.
That's what we're meant to be, friends. And I think we value ourselves. We see ourselves as individuals.
We are.
And just having fun. And so people, it is a summer read. Yes, it is. But you can read it in the winter. You can read it all year round. And you will read it again. I bet this is the kind of book you'll go back and you'll read it and you'll say, how the heck did she do that? My goodness, what is she, a genius or something? Yes. Okay, do you have a website you want people to go to and all the other social media stuffy?
Absolutely. So my website is JoniElliott.com. So, and that's Joni, J-O-A-N-I. And Elliott has two L's and two T's. And so I'd love people to visit my website. Lots of great information there.
Exactly. And, wonderful. This is a great book for a book club, because everybody, once people can start having real book club meetings.
Yeah.
With drinks. I like book club meetings where you drink, actually.
And there's great book club information on a website, too. And there's a lot of tea in my book. And
yeah.
So tea might be.
Yeah, you could have tea, yeah.
Sure.
Manhattan iced tea, Long Island iced tea. They have all those different nice iced teas, perfect for the summer. Just make sure, again, if you're going to read this outdoors to have your sun protection. And I think you've just done a great job, Joni. It's been an absolute joy to talk to you.
Oh, it's been a delight. Thank you.
Okay. I expect a call from you that you are going to come on and announce your book deal, okay?
I'd love nothing more. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Wow. What a week. Two book deal books. I know that. This is going to be a funny movie. And The Photographer by Mary Dixie Carter is going to be a great movie. This has been I've just had so much fun this week. Wow, it's gone so fast. I just want to remind you, my webpage is radio-joyonpaper. You can go there and hear my interviews. I will be posting them all week. I decided to spend my weekend just posting all of these wonderful interviews I've been having, so many, and with such a wide range of books. And I hope that you will go there and see what I've got and be inspired. Look at her. She was inspired. She decided to do it. She quit her job, a day job. Luckily, she had a husband who said, go for it. Don't you love husbands who say, go for it? My husband said, go for it. Once I told him I was going to do a radio program, I kept it secret until a few days before, because he would have thought I was crazy. But I said, I'm going to do a radio program. He said, when did this come out? I said, oh, well, I decided it while you were having knee surgery, and now I'm going to do it, and it's a few weeks later. And he said, go for it, which is exactly what a husband should do, or a wife should do, if the husband is the one who wants to write. Because when you have it in you, when you have a story in you, and we all do have stories, if you have somebody to support you like that, that's really great. And you never know what's going to happen, isn't it? I was so happy that to hear that Diane Fossey used the word joy when Peanuts held her hand and she started crying afterwards, and she said it was just pure joy that there she was and a gorilla was holding her hand. Perhaps the first time a human held a gorilla's hand without cutting it off. You crazy, horrible poacher people. And I believe poacher people should be shot. I have no death penalty. If you're poaching animals, gorillas or elephants or anything else, I think you should be shot. I don't even think about it twice, because these animals are so gorgeous. And did you just read they're going to kill 50,000 elephants in Africa? That's what they plan to do this summer. So if you can get on to any of the websites and do some protesting, maybe it'll help. Who knows? We have to try not to get depressed about it all. But I am so happy, really, that Ellen DeGeneres put her money where her mouth was. She put the money into, I think she bought 11 acres of land just set aside for gorillas. So that's a wonderful thing. So I really admire her for doing that. I know she's no longer doing her television program, but maybe she can go over there and do a broadcast from over there. Probably the gorillas will enjoy it. All right. Well, it's been an exciting week from the point of view of all the wonderful authors I've had on the program. And, you know, you could be an author on the program, too, because all you have to do is listen to me. Because one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps if you're very lucky, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry, your book will become a series on the Hallmark Channel. And for Phil Vega, I want his book to become a major motion picture. And that's Last Exit to Montauk. Check it out, because he was on Don Reese's Hollywood Connections. And I have his interview on my website. So go there, www.radio-joyonpaper, and you can listen to Phil Vega's interview with Don Reese. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. He's saluting me, and he's a very funny guy. And he has a program, and you know, he's very funny. He's a comedian himself. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Read a good book, or write a good book, and try if you can write one, like The Audacity. Oh, my goodness, The Audacity of Sarah Grayson. Read it and get some sunscreen before you go outside. Okay, bye-bye now.